Court will proceed to the fourth case, Foss versus Sears Roebuck. No, excuse me. Yeah, no, that's right. Foss versus, we had a dismissed case ahead of us. So this is Foss versus Sears Roebuck and Ms. Case.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The plaintiff in this case began her career with Sears in 1974 at the age of 19. Sears terminated her 30 years later, just a few days after she turned 50. It bears repeating in a case like this that at the summary judgment stage, a plaintiff does not have to prove anything. Instead, all that she has to do is offer sufficient evidence of pretext from which a jury could infer age discrimination. The plaintiff in this case did that in two main ways. She did it by showing that similarly situated younger employees were treated far more favorably, and by offering evidence that defendant's purported non-discriminatory reason for the favorable treatment was simply not worthy of credence. The defendant claims that plaintiff failed to establish that her purported comparators were similarly situated for two reasons. The defendant claims that she and her younger counterparts were not similarly situated because they did not share the exact same tenure, and he claims that they were not similarly situated because they did not share the exact same set of comparable failings. To begin, defendant's tenure argument in this case, I believe, is particularly problematic in that if this court were to accept it, older plaintiffs could rarely, if ever, succeed on a claim under the McDonnell-Douglas burden of proof because age is almost always going to be inextricably linked to tenure or experience. Moreover, defendant does not cite any relevant case law to support its proposition that tenure in a case like this would be a proper consideration. The only case that the defendant cites has to do with a failure to promote, where of course tenure is relevant. Now, in arguing that employees have to share the same tenure in order to be similarly situated, defendant is advancing the type of argument that this court has time and again, I believe, rejected. In Humphreys versus CBOC West and Peerick versus Indiana University, both of which were decided quite recently, the court said that the similarly situated analysis was never intended to be rigid or inflexible, and that generally it only entails a showing that the two employees dealt with the same supervisor, were subject to the same standards, and engaged in similar conduct. In Humphreys, this court even went so far as to emphasize a common sense approach to the similarly situated analysis and said that there is no magic formula and that the question instead should be, are there enough common features between the individuals to allow for a meaningful comparison? In this case, the answer to that question is absolutely. In this case, it is undisputed that all of the store managers reported to the same supervisor, Wendy Cargas. It's undisputed that they were all subject to the same standards, and it's undisputed that they were all performing well under the 2.8 bare minimum threshold. Now, in my brief, I discuss all of who we believe to be the substantially younger comparators, but today I just want to discuss one who I think is particularly relevant. Her name was Judy Spivey, and she was a store manager just like plaintiff. She was 40 years old, so she was 10 years younger than the plaintiff at the time of the plaintiff's termination. Ms. Spivey had a scorecard score of 2.2 at the end of 2004. This is just a mere 3/10 of a point higher than plaintiff's score when she was first placed on the PPI process and encouraged to resign. And it is only a half a point higher than plaintiff's score at the time of her termination. Now, before Ms. Cargas brought Ms. Spivey to her store 1030, where she was at the time of plaintiff's termination, Ms. Spivey had been a store manager at another store in the South Chicago district. So she wasn't new to the South Chicago district, she wasn't new to the store manager position, and she wasn't new at all to the scorecard measure of performance, at least to the extent that all of the managers had to start dealing with it in about late 2002. She worked under the same measure of performance for either as long or almost as long as plaintiff. It's not entirely clear from the record. The only difference between Spivey and plaintiff is that Spivey was 10 years younger than plaintiff. Now, in Humphreys, this court explained that even one comparator can be sufficient for the similarly situated pretext analysis and sufficient to survive summary judgment. Considering that holding, we would contend that the evidence of Spivey's treatment versus the evidence of plaintiff's treatment is sufficient by itself for the plaintiff to have survived summary judgment in this case. The defendant also claims that the plaintiff and her younger counterparts weren't similarly situated because of some problems with a false setup. Defendant again advances this argument despite that in Peerick this court said that employees do not have to have identical failings for purposes of the similarly situated analysis. Now, the defendant never argues that this failed false setup was an independent reason for plaintiff's termination. They never try to claim that plaintiff would have been terminated for this mistake by itself. In fact, Cargas, plaintiff's boss, told her well before the false setup was even talked about that she was going to be terminated on September 13th unless her scorecard scores improved. Now, we know her scores didn't improve, and plaintiff, sure enough, was terminated on September 13th, the day Cargas told her she was going to be. Now, for defendant to now claim that this false setup, for which plaintiff wasn't even present, she was out of town celebrating her 50th birthday, for them to claim that this is now some unrelated intervening reason is nothing more than an effort to muddy the pretextual waters, and it's certainly not sufficient to render them dissimilar. And another note, Cargas's supposed
You're not claiming that she could deny any responsibility for it, are you?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. I mean, she understands, and we agree that she was responsible for what went on at her store. What we are claiming, however, is first that it was never alleged that it was an independent reason for her termination. So even at a minimum, these scorecard scores for which she was being disparately disciplined were at least a motivating factor in the decision to terminate her. And also, Cargas's opinion about this false setup was a subjective opinion, which makes it impossible for plaintiff to affirm or deny because no one can ever affirm or deny a subjective belief. And this court has noted in two cases that I cited in my brief the particular problems with subjective opinions in these types of cases. Those cases are Giacoletto versus Amex and Perfetti versus First National Bank. And in both of those cases, the courts held that because of their unverifiable nature, that juries could choose to disregard subjective factors or even consider them additional evidence of pretext. And I think that the same is true in this case. Now, while Cargas's subjective opinion about something that happened while plaintiff was on vacation would certainly be relevant at trial, for purposes of summary judgment, it is simply not enough to carry the day and certainly not enough to render plaintiff dissimilar to her counterparts. I see I'm into my rebuttal time, but I do want to make one more point. Defendant alleges that in its non-discriminatory reason that it did not discriminate against these individuals because of age, but that Cargas could only handle a few PPIs at a time, and that's why she selected the three older people that she did. But we believe that that justification is not worthy of credence and certainly not sufficient to warrant summary judgment, and here's why. Cargas was the district general manager for 17 months. There is not a shred of evidence that she disciplined, let alone terminated, any of the younger store general managers in those 17 months. She was the district general manager for 7 months after she fired plaintiff and forced John Spencer into the involuntary retirement. Now, under her own reasoning, she had 7 whole months to start disciplining these still underperforming younger store managers, but she never did. That right there alone shows that she was applying her expectations disparately to the older folks. Defendant cannot explain that sufficiently away, and because of that, this case should have gone to a jury.
All right. Thank you, Ms.
The rest of my argument for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Weil?
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Tom Wild on behalf of Sears Roebuck and Company. Your Honors, the district court correctly determined that Ms. Foss failed to establish an inference of pretext on her age discrimination claim, and we ask this court to affirm that ruling. I would like to focus primarily this morning on the similarly situated point and pretext point as to the comparators. Ms. Foss argues that there's an inference of pretext because Wendy Cargas, the district general manager, did not place younger store managers on performance improvement plans or terminate them. The district court properly rejected the same arguments that we're hearing now, and Ms. Foss has continued to ignore several key undisputed facts in the record. One is that Ms. Foss indisputably had the worst balanced scorecard rating in the district. And it's important to keep in mind that the balanced scorecard ratings are not subjective. They're empirical. They're based on hard data relating to the store. They're based on sales. They're based on profits. They're based on employee turnover. And they're based on customer satisfaction surveys, Things, by the way, which Ms. Cargis had nothing to do with. It's based purely on the store's performance. And Ms. Foss was rated the worst. Second, the record does show that there were two major marketing events, not just the fall apparel setup, but also a signing by the Cubs' then catcher Michael Barrett in the store, which Ms. Cargis believed were poorly done. Ms. Foss argues that that's subjective, so the court shouldn't consider it. It was subjective in the sense that Ms. Cargis comes into the store and the record shows that the signage isn't done and the apparel's not out on the floor for the fall setup. Pretty obvious things to discern. The record shows that. For the Michael Barrett signing, the record shows that she came into the store and sees that it's set up so that people will be out in the parking lot rather than inside the store, which is part of the point of a promotional event like that, to have people inside the store where they can see the merchandise. So it's not terribly subjective or unverifiable. There is no record evidence that any of the younger comparators had any of those types of additional performance problems beyond scorecard scores, which in any event were better than Ms. Foss. For those reasons alone, the comparators are not similarly situated to Ms. Foss.
You had five of those store managers that were older than Foss.
Yet there were 12 total store managers in the district. Three of them were placed on performance plans in 2004. Nine were not. Of the nine who were not, three of them were older than Ms. Foss. One of the other nine was only 4 years younger than Ms. Foss, which this court has repeatedly held is not a substantial gap from which you can infer age discrimination. Now, Ms. Cargis had very specific reasons for how she made the decision of who to place on a PPI, a performance plan, in 2004. And keep in mind that she inherited this district when it was ranked last or next to last out of more than 60 districts nationwide. So she clearly had her hands full. And what did she do? She said, I've got a district that's struggling. I've got to figure out how to address these things as much as I can, but I can't handle more than a few performance plans at a time. So she looked at who was struggling the most, and she also considered how long they had been in the store assignment, and she prioritized them. She put three people on performance plans in 2004. Those three people were all ranked in the bottom four as far as those scorecard scores in the district. The one who was not placed on a performance plan but also was in the bottom four had only been in the assignment for 7 months, and we know that she considered how long they were in the assignment, and that person was only 4 years younger than Ms. Foss, which, again, isn't a big enough gap to infer age discrimination from. Ms. Foss focuses this morning primarily on Judy Spivey. Well, the record shows that Ms. Spivey was put into her store assignment in February of 2004. Ms. Foss was placed on her performance plan in May of 2004, just a few months later. And Ms. Cargis testified that she wanted to give people some time to adjust to their store. It doesn't matter how long the person has been a store manager somewhere else or how long they've been under the balanced scorecard system. The fact is, when you come into a store, Cargis felt that you needed some time to learn your team, to learn the store, and to turn the store around. And that's why she picked three people who had been in their stores for more than 4 years as the ones to place on the performance plan. Spivey, again, had only been there for a couple of months. She's distinguishable as a matter of law. Ms. Foss argues that we should ignore how much time the person spent in the store, that tenure should not be relevant to determining who goes on a performance plan or who gets terminated. But here, the store managers were rated based on how their store performed. It's hard to imagine what could be a more relevant litmus test for Ms. Cargis to have focused on than how long the store managers had been in the store, particularly given that she inherited a district that was struggling and felt she should only try to address a few performance plans at a time. Ms. Foss, in her brief, argues that, well, there's a Sears policy that says that managers have to treat all similar performance issues consistently. But that just begs the question of whether or not all these store managers were in consistent performance situations. Ms. Cargis felt they weren't, again, because of how long they've been in the store. Ms. Foss's argument would mean that if a store manager is assigned to a new store that is struggling and gets that next month's balanced scorecard score and it's still poor, they should immediately be put on a performance plan. That doesn't make any sense, and that's not how Cargis looked at it. There's simply no basis for inferring that Ms. Cargis's reasons for deciding to put Ms. Foss on a performance plan and then later to terminate her is a pretext for age discrimination, particularly, again, when you consider that some of the best-performing store managers in the district and the ones who she chose not to put on performance plans or discipline were older than Ms. Foss. And again, we have to keep in mind that Ms. Foss made this decision based not just on balanced scorecard scores, but also on these two marketing events. Ms. Foss argues this morning that the two marketing events really don't matter because Cargis told Foss she was going to terminate her on September 13th. Well, the record actually shows that Ms. Cargis told Ms. Foss that you've got 30 more days, which is the ordinary process for performance plans, or you might get terminated. The record shows quite clearly that Ms. Cargis testified that the precipitating event was the two marketing events. Would she have terminated Ms. Foss without the two botched marketing events? We don't know, and the court doesn't have to decide that because Cargis said the marketing events were effectively the straw that broke the camel's back. And the termination notice that was given to Ms. Foss at the time specifically references the marketing events. So there's no question that they played a role in the decision, and again, there's no evidence whatsoever that any of the store managers besides Ms. Foss, younger or older, had additional performance issues like those marketing events beyond the balanced scorecard scores. So it's our view that the district court was correct. There's no evidence here of pretext. These other store managers to whom Ms. Foss compares herself were not similarly situated. We agree that the similarly situated test is not rigid. It is flexible. But what could be more relevant in a case like this than how much time the store managers had in their store to turn it around? That's the criterion Ms. Cargis used, and Ms. Foss has done nothing to show that that was not the true reason for Ms. Cargis's motivation. Unless the court has any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Wilde. Ms. Case.
May it please the court. We are not arguing that tenure might not be relevant before a jury. What we are arguing is that the consideration of tenure is not enough to render these managers dissimilar for purposes of the prima facie analysis, which was never intended to box plaintiffs into the corner like defendant is trying to argue. Instead, the prima facie method of proof was intended to be a leg up for plaintiffs. We're not arguing that it's wholly irrelevant. We're arguing that it doesn't carry the day on summary judgment. Defendant said that and defendant is correct that Cargis told plaintiff that if she did not improve her scorecard scores that she could be terminated in 30 days. She told her that on August 13, 2004. Plaintiff was terminated on September 13, 2004. She was told she was going to be terminated far before these false setups ever occurred. During defendant's presentation, I still did not hear an explanation as to why Cargis, after ridding herself of these three terribly underperforming older managers, why she still failed to take any action to improve the performance of her younger store managers. I'm not up here purporting that she should have terminated them right away, but if her standards were really the standards that they wanted for that district, under her own reasoning, after she got these three older people out of the way, she should have started trying to improve the performance of all these younger people that were still failing to meet it. She did nothing for 7 months, not even as much as one informal memorandum to any of them saying, "You are not cutting it." I think the fact that, that completely, at least for purposes of summary judgment, undercuts defendant's non-discriminatory reason in this case. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.